Good morning. Welcome to what's apparently a popular committee this morning. I will open this meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Human Services, on Wednesday, February 22nd, or more importantly, my grandson's birthday. At this point, we are holding a public hearing only on House Bill 4165. This has been a bill that's been heard in several committees, so I am going to appeal to those who are signed up this morning to keep their testimony and their comments brief. So I will open a public hearing on House Bill 4165 and ask our good assistant here to get us lined out.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. House Bill 4165 is the bill relating to the Early Learning Council. The focus of the public hearing today, because you are a budget subcommittee, will be on the fiscal impact, but I believe that Duke Shepherd of the Governor's Office is here to talk a brief overview of the bill as well. And at this point, it is not scheduled for a work session, but at the point where it might be, we would bring in amendments that deal with the fiscal impact of the bill and make the necessary adjustments to the appropriations for the agencies that would be affected for this biennium.
Thank you. Mr. Shepherd. And we also have Kate Nass from Budget and Management. Thank you.
Co-Chair Cowan, co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, Duke Shepherd, policy advisor, Governor Kitzhaber. I will focus on brevity. You have before you an 87-page bill, but let me narrow this down that only changes really occur of substance on 25 of those pages, because you have many pages where only three words change. This is because the key focus of the bill is bringing into coordination and alignment the various structures across state government that have historically touched in some way early learning, but not in a consistent or focused way. And so that the two key overarching end results of this legislation are to, one, consolidate the functions of the State Commission on Children and Families, the Child Care Commission, and the Early Childhood Matters Advisory Council. That council is not in statute. It was created by Governor Kulongoski via executive order to comply with the Head Start Act into one body, which is the Early Learning Council, which was created by Senate Bill 909. Importantly, this legislation will bring us fully in alignment with the Head Start Act. So, and the nice thing is the policy objectives in the Head Start Act are very well aligned with the objectives that we're trying to achieve here in Oregon. The second key component is the eventual elimination of the system of local commissions on children and families. The original bill had a very short time frame. At the bill before you, the A.N. Gross bumps that out, and the eventual replacement of that structure with a new one more focused on outcomes and accountability through an RFP application process would occur not before 2014. So January 2014 would be the implementation date for what you may have heard of previously called hubs. They are now called community-based coordinators of early learning services. If we come up with a better name sometime soon, we might change it, but for now it gets at the function. And some key changes from the original bill that I can just touch on. Importantly, those are the big changes. I just wanted to set out that what this bill really does is change the state governance structure, sets up a process for replacing the commission system with one that is going to be more coordinated and accountable, but really sets out a lot of work to come back to the legislature. And even in this RFP process, what's in the bill are some baseline standards for what these hubs might look like, these coordinated community-based coordinators, but calls for a very public process to come back with the criteria and standards so that the legislature can approve them, roll that out, and line that up with the budget in 2013. So I'll quickly go over the key changes, Madam Chair, if I might, just there jump out. So Pages 2, 3, 4, and 5 incorporate the Head Start Act into statute. Page 6, Section 11 is a joint planning process with the State Interagency Council, Interagency Coordinating Council on Early Intervention and Early Childhood Special Education. It's a very open planning process without a predetermined outcome. These are important services. They are part of early learning. But beyond that, how we better coordinate them should be open to exploration, and that's how we've left the bill. Because I've named a specific program here, I do want to point out that no program dollars, as we get into the fiscal, are changed in this legislation, that no funds to direct services are changed. The only changes, and this will be reflected in the fiscal, are at the state level, in who's getting paid to do state-level work and what that work will be to set up the next iteration of this system for you all to look at in 2013. Page 6, Section 12 directs the Council to propose a comprehensive children's budget. We had originally borrowed the term global budget from healthcare, but because that term has become healthcare branded, we looked around for better examples of what we're trying to get at, and there's a comprehensive children's budget really is a better way to look at it, because we are talking about stretching across education, human services, and healthcare, which is a little different than sort of the global budget conversation. Page 7, Section 13 calls for an inventory of family support manager functions. This was a key component we talked about a lot last session. And again, this is a function. It is a navigator function, a broker function. We have a lot of families who receive services now going through a lot of different doors. It is not an effective use of state dollars. But what we know in some places that this is handled well, and probably in others they aren't. But rather than just lay out in a budget or policy document a very prescriptive structure about what this needs to look like, we really need to get a handle on what we have already and what works well, and determine whether it's small tweaks, some different kinds of trainings or different kind of structures, but leave it open to come back in 2013 to see what really the best approach might be for you all to take. Page 7, Section 14 moves ahead with the kindergarten readiness assessment. This is not an assessment to screen anyone in or out of kindergarten. This is designed to be a tool to give kindergarten teachers the ability to customize their approach to what children need when they arrive in kindergarten. And importantly, if we do this right, it gives you all the ability to look back at the investments that led up to kindergarten and determine where we can do better, what works, what needs to be replicated. And as I mentioned earlier, a lengthy section on community-based coordinators is all about coming back to the legislature based on some minimum criteria initially, but going out a very public process. The terms transparent public process to include stakeholders are sprinkled throughout this bill to emphasize that that's what's going to happen over the next year, that this is not going to be a situation where the Early Learning Council has four meetings and comes back with a big fat bill, that this will be an open process to include a lot of stakeholders. Because of the focus on brevity, I will just close by saying that the A engrossed bill is a better bill than the first bill, that the stakeholder involvement hasn't been one that watered it down to sort of a lowest common denominator just to keep something viable. It is actually a better bill. It has more detail. It has more specificity. It has very precise approach for how we come back to the legislature in 2013, and I think it positions Oregon very well to come back in 13 and take a very big next step forward. And I'm happy to answer any questions. I will add on the fiscal that there's no new general fund requirement here, that the existing staff resources within state government currently in the commission system are sufficient to get the work done that is called for in the bill.
Thank you. Very quickly, I want to finish this panel.
Oh, that's fine. Go ahead. It's not critical.
And then we'll take questions. Go ahead, Kate.
Thank you, Co-Chair. For the record, Kate Nass with Department of Administrative Services Budget and Management. And just to go with what we're thinking on the fiscal one here is basically, like Duke said, all payments that go out to local commissions will continue as budgeted. So whatever's remaining in the State Commission on Children and Families will move over to Oregon Education Investment Board, Early Learning Council, or Youth Development Council, depending on which body actually takes that role. And then that basically leaves the personal services and services and supplies that are administered by the State Commission, and allows the Oregon Education Investment Board to use those to do the work of 4165.
Thank you. Senator Steiner-Hamrich?
really quick, and I know, Mr. Shepherd, I've belabored this point other times, but I just want to get it on record here. I really hope there's going to be very close collaboration with the Early Learning Council and, for example, Intermountain ESD, which is already working in its community to develop a kindergarten readiness assessment so that we're not reinventing the wheel or having different instruments floating around the state. I think this is a good place for us to have uniformity across the state so we're comparing apples to apples. And then the other thing is I see the word health needs in here a lot. I don't see a lot about how these are going to be the services are going to be coordinated with the child's primary care physician. And if you could just elaborate a little bit on the intention about how that's going to happen down the road. I know it can't happen instantly, but to me that seems pretty critical.
Co-Chair Cowan, Senator Steiner-Hayward. So two pieces. I think one result that's been interesting of all the work in the last year, going back to the Senate Bill 909 discussion and then the 31-member design team work, that communities have taken it up as an opportunity, and we've sort of started calling them can-do communities. We'll hear from Intermountain ESD at the Early Learning Council later. We'll hear from Deschutes, Crook, and Jefferson County later. So we are definitely looking at this as a way to reward and encourage innovation and keep the focus on outcomes and have some consistency to do what works. But it's been amazing to see how people are really running through the door of opportunity right now. In terms of the health connection, partly what we have is a timing issue, because the health reform work that you have all done is just further ahead. So the conversations that the Early Learning Council has had thus far have been about working with the Health Policy Board to plan and come back, hopefully with some recommendations, but be very thoughtful about how we can integrate these two approaches as the CCO construct rolls out, and then as we follow behind with early learning on a different timeline. As we've talked about it, and as I've talked about with many of you, what we're trying to not have here is go from 50 silos to two big ones. And I will also add that by aligning with the Head Start Act, we will add some membership to the council. So there will be somebody on there from the Oregon Health Authority specifically to help make that work happen.
Very quick follow-up, Madam Chair, if I may. It may turn out that you will need some kind of a HIPAA waiver down the road. If you do, I'd be happy to see that for this purpose, personally. Thank you.
Thank you. There are no other questions. Thank you for your presentation. And I will call up the group representing the Coalition of County Children and Families Commissioners, Dave Fiscom, Bill Davidson, Elise Brown, and Lynn Lundquist, please. And I am truly going to ask the four of you to consolidate your comments into...
Should be two and two, Madam Chair, if that's
okay. Okay, all right. We have four other fairly large bills to get to today, so I'm going to be pretty heavy-handed up here.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. Elise Brown representing the Children's Institute and Ready for School. And in the interest of time, you're going to get in just a moment a letter from former Governor Vic Atiyah, who's been a leaders panel member for the Ready for School campaign since 2006 under the leadership of Dick Alexander. So I'm going to defer my time to Lynn Lundquist, our co-chair of Ready for School.
Thank you, Co-Chair Cowan and senators and representatives. This bill is about education, and I want to take sort of a simplified approach to this. We know that in our education today that the outcomes are not acceptable. Not acceptable for every student in the system. So what that simply means to me is that we, you, and us together need to be agents of change. And change is always a little scary. But we are, I think you're all aware that early childhood is the place to invest the dollars so that we have the outcomes that we want. We can no longer afford, in my opinion, to play catch-up. And that's not saying anything negative about what's going on, but that's just reality. We can't afford the ineffectiveness of that, because not every student, which I believe is essential, is meeting their potential outcomes, and we simply cannot afford to not have that happen. The key component of this bill, to me, is one word, and that's opportunity. It's an opportunity for our state, for our families, for our communities, to finally have an educational system that does allow the students to meet their potential. It goes without, it goes without saying probably that there's risk involved every time you have a change. And there are those who would say the path is not clearly defined. The process is not clearly defined. We don't know exactly how we're going to get from point A to point B. And they're right. But with whenever you're having change, and the members on the leaders panel have been through many changes in their businesses, it takes a little faith. Now, that's not simply to say blind faith, but it does take some faith. Because without, if we wait until we know every, we've dotted every I and we've crossed every T, we will never get there. But just to use a personal example, I think, of faith, that I hope she'll give me a little indulgence. 41 years ago yesterday, I married my wife Barb and five kids from 9 to 16. Now, I don't expect you to have that kind of faith. But having said that, the outcome has been great. And here's the opportunity. Combine the faith, the vision that you have and that the state needs to have in order to make our education system better. We will have very successful outcomes for all our kids. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the next group that I prematurely tried to get you up here. Thank you.
Good morning, chairs, co-chairs, co-vice chairs, committee members. For the record, Dave Fiscom here representing the Coalition of County Children and Families Commissions to support House Bill 4165. With me to my right is Bill Davidson, the chair of the coalition, who also serves as chair of the Local Children and Families Commission in Deschutes County. He has traveled here from Central Oregon for this hearing this morning. We appear here on behalf of all of Oregon's 36 local children and families commissions. Madam Chair, I recognize the bright line you've described with regard to the focus of our testimony, and I will try to hew to that. We will try to hew to that to the extent we can. I would say that in any event, we'll be brief. The coalition has worked long and hard and in a constructive manner to produce a solid early learning council bill. We believe that's what exists before you in the form of House Bill 4165-A. A week or so ago, on policy grounds, we appeared before the Human Services House Human Services Subcommittee to make our comments. We appreciate the work that produced the bill before you, led by Mr. Shepherd, as well as Representative Kotek, and amendments to the bill that affect the fiscal policy and funding of local programs around the state, which is your purview. Two key points in the Ian Gross bill I want to underline briefly for you. First, we appreciate Mr. Shepherd's agreement, as well as the consensus to give local children and families commissions a longer transition to adjust to the new early learning council. Under House Bill 4165A, local commissions will in fact exist until January 1, 2014. This is a delay from an earlier date, but I would tell you that it is not a delay for convenience. Instead, it is designed to assure that children and families who depend on services will continue to receive those services that will be funded during this transition. Second point is we appreciate the inclusion of Section 133 on page 87 of House Bill 4165A. This is important to the coalition and a number of legislators with whom we have worked to ensure the continuity of services and funding for them for the benefit of children and families. The governor's office was willing to include this, and we want to express our specific appreciation to the governor's office for allowing us to include these words in the bill before you. In the House Human Services Committee, one other point. We noticed that there could be an unintentional gap between the dates of June 30, 2013 and January 1, 2014. We reached an easy and clear agreement with Mr. Shepherd, Representative Kotek, and others that we will work very solidly together in the 2013 session to reach everybody's objective, which is that there will be no gap in services to those who depend on those services. So Madam Chair, the stakes are high as you move forward. Thank you for your consideration. With that, I'll stop and turn to my colleagues. I have to mention my boss for this client, Mr. Davidson, and he does want to make for the record at least one comment about an amendment, a friendly amendment that we have for you, and he'll describe that. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Davidson, for coming this way to join us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Co-Chair. Committee members, for the record, my name is Bill Davidson. I am a citizen volunteer, chair of the Coalition of County Commissions on Children and Families, and also chair of the Deschutes County Commission on Children and Families. And I am testifying on behalf of both this morning. I will not belabor the point that the Coalition and Deschutes County supports this particular bill, and we appreciate all the work that went on between the Coalition and the Governor's Office, especially Mr. Duke Shepherd, in helping us get the bill to where it is today. I will bring up one amendment that Deschutes County would like to see. It is HB 4165-A15. It is a clarifying amendment. It is a friendly amendment. It only clarifies information on the Keep Kids Safe registration plate. It has been worked out between Representative Wisnett and the Governor's Office to have this clarifying language in the bill. If you have questions about it, I would be more than happy to answer those questions.
Madam Chair, if you don't have that amendment, I could get it for you. It came to Representative Wisnett at his request a day or so ago. We wanted to mention it for the record so we didn't miss miss our advocacy that you include that in your deliberations when there's a work session. So we'll get that amendment to you. It does exist. Council has produced it, and the words are acceptable to us, the advocates of it. Representative Wisnett is the one who got it for us, so thank you.
It is on the record. We do not have it before the committee today. We do ask that you make sure that it gets to LFO before anything is considered, and today is not scheduled for a work session on this bill. Okay. Was there a question or
no? I was just waving about the issue.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I will call Mark Nystrom, representing Association of Oregon Counties.
Co-Chair Cowan and members of the committee, my name is Mark Nystrom. I'm representing the Association of Oregon Counties. I'll keep it really brief. AOC supports House Bill 4165. We've been working with the Governor's Office, the Early Learning Council, and the legislature to get this bill where we like it. We appreciate their leadership on this bill. And to echo Mr. Fiscom's comments, we appreciate the transition year and the continuation of funding. Counties will continue to be an integral part of the early learning system. We're going to continue to do public health, mental health, run the juvenile system and community corrections, and we look forward to working together with the Early Learning Council on this in the future.
Thank you.
So thank you.
Mark Nelson. And how about we have Stacey Michelson come up at the same time.
Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, my name is Mark Nelson. I represent the Oregon Head Start Association. As I think many of you know, we've had serious concerns about the Early Learning Council bill at the Head Start Association. A lot of those concerns really evolve around one word, and that's the unknown, as a previous witness indicated, as to what we're looking at in terms of the future and how does Head Start fit in with that process. We come today to support the bill, in particular because the Governor's Office has accepted the language, which you will find in Section 15 on page 7. That language lays out the process by which the Early Learning Council will come back to you in 2013 with a full-fledged plan as to how the, we still refer them as hubs, the Early Learning Hubs are going to work. One of our concerns was, at this point in time, we don't know about budgets, about how many people are going to be employed, whether it's going to be contractual, how this whole system is going to work in terms of the delivery of services. In Section 15, it outlines a process that they will bring back to you and what's going to be included in that plan as to how those hubs are going to be structured, how they're going to work in the process. And the key language for us is on page 8, I think for you and for us, in sub 3, where it says, except to prepare the report described in subsection 1 of this section, the council may not expend public funds to implement community-based coordinators of early learning services, that is, the hubs, until the Legislative Assembly approves the council's implementation plans by repealing this subsection. In that way, I think that the entire body can see what this entire program eventually is going to look like and how those centers are going to deliver those services and look at the cost of those services and how that process works. And we want to thank the governor's office for agreeing to those provisions, and we too will look forward to reviewing those plans as you will be receiving them in 2013. And in addition to that, they also moved the date from 2012 to 2013, which again we appreciate. So we support this legislation as it stands today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Stacy. Thank you. Co-Chair Cowan, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Stacy Michelson with Children First for Oregon, and I will keep my comments rather brief today. As most of you are already aware, I'm familiar with Children First. We work very hard on supporting public programs and policies that ensure that all Oregon children have access to the supports they need to thrive and grow up successful. And to that end, we've been really hopeful about the governor's proposal regarding greater alignment between early childhood supports and our education system. We absolutely believe that ensuring that kids have the support they need outside of school to succeed when they're in school is key to success. But I do want to speak today to some concerns we have just about sort of process and being aware as we go forward, especially for you folks sitting on the budget subcommittee. Recognizing that a lot of the ELC proposal rests on addressing the needs of our most vulnerable children, and that, you know, we recognize that there is a whole volume of research that shows the importance of early learning opportunities, especially for kids in those lower socioeconomic brackets. And so childcare settings are one of the most obvious places that we can ensure we're meeting the needs of those kids. Unfortunately, for most families living under 200% of FPL, they find it really difficult to get their children access to the quality early learning environments they need in order to show up to school ready to learn. And so as we move forward with this process, I want to ensure that the committee is aware that we believe in order to be successful with our efforts around the Early Learning Council, we need to ensure that programs that get those students access to early learning opportunities is really key to our overall success. And some particular programs like Head Start, employment-related daycare, we believe are really key for those kids that we are trying to serve through the Early Learning Council. So we just encourage you as we go through this budgeting process to recognize that there are things we can be doing outside of the ELC in our budgeting process that will bolster and support the work that we're trying to achieve through the ELC. And so we encourage you to keep that in mind if we're to be successful in this effort. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay. There are no further questions. Senator Bates.
Thank you. Mark, just to make sure, first, I appreciate you pointing this out because we haven't had a chance to look at this very carefully yet, so I appreciate you pointing this out. And I want to make sure I have clarity on these funds, and so I'm going to try to look at this from a ways and means point of view on the section you outlined for us, and I've read carefully here. The section calls for the Early Learning Council to prepare a report back for the next session. The area you're talking about, 11 through 14, doesn't necessarily discuss that report. It talks about expending funds once the Legislative Assembly approves the council implementation plans, not a report. So it's kind of open-ended here. This isn't something necessarily that would happen the way I read this in the next session at some time in the future. I'm not sure if those plans are talking about the individual plans for counties or the overall plan for the state by the by the Early Learning Council. What's your understanding of this language about plans and allowing funds to go out for community-based coordinators?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, my understanding, and it was our intent, I believe the governor's intent, is that the Early Learning Council would bring this report back, which would embody the implementation plans for going forward with the hubs, as I continue to refer to them. And one of our greatest concerns, as I indicated in the testimony, is we don't know what these things look like. We don't know how they're actually going to work locally and how they're going to be integrated. And so we believe the report, and we will work with the governor in developing that, and will show how that implementation is going to take place. So you, like you normally do in the budgetary process, will look at what's being presented and then say, yes, that we believe that's a proper way to move forward from this step forward. It was always our intent that this would happen next session, and that you would give final approval to let's move forward now that we can see what it looks like, now that we know how much it's going to cost, that we're contracting or we have state employees, we'll give it the blessing. And that's been our concern, again, is the unknown.
And just to follow up, make sure we're clear on this, get on the record, and we expect to pull the trigger on this probably in the next session, assuming that everyone agrees to these plans and the funds involved. Because really, when you get down to it here, what we're talking about is who gets the money. Does it go to Head Start? It goes to other programs? It goes to new programs? How those programs coordinate? It's the same issues we're talking about in the CCOs, and it's reasonable conversation. It's a good conversation. But what I want to get on the record is we're not talking about a session of 2015 or 2017. We're talking about 2013, pulling the trigger here, getting this program off the ground.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, that's correct. And as we said, you know, we're not here to say we're going to love it.
No,
we don't know.
No,
what it looks like.
I understand that.
And neither will you.
But the language is a little unclear to me here, and I want to make sure we have clarity that we're talking about trying to get this program off the ground in 2013.
Absolutely, Senator.
Thank you
very much. And with that, Senator Winters.
I just to comment, because I'm glad that the good senator brought a clarification to this particular issue and subject that we are talking about, some implementation, because we can actually pick this apart forever, and no one is ever satisfied in this building, because when you start bringing something together as comprehensive as this particular issue, and as those of you know, I've been around here for a long time when we tried to get the children's plan through. And any time there is winners and losers, we're going to pick things apart. So I thank you for asking that question of clarity, that we are talking about implementing and going forward, you know, sooner rather than later. I hope that everyone's listening, and I think the comment that my good former colleague, when he made the comment about we've got to take some leaps of faith. Some of us in this building have talked about a seamless educational system, and at least I have, since 1999. We're now in 2012. We all have said, you know, in the past that we must make some investments on our front end. We must educate our young children. We must have a coordinated, collaborative way of providing services to families. So I hope that everybody honestly comes to the discussion and the stakeholders, and that we come together to talk about how we're going to put the best, not only for education, but for the social service delivery system in Oregon that strengthens our families and educate our children. And I needed to put that on the record. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4165 and remind folks that we were not scheduled for a work session on that bill today. With that, please don't go far. We just have a change of staffing here.
That's my cue to leave.
Yeah.
So are you guys, are you guys talking about
it? It doesn't say here. It
my schedule's
say
very
here.
Free, and I should, but
I understand.
Discussion with us, with educators today about this. It does not say people have to. It's an automatic.
It's an automatic.
It's good. I don't see it. about child poverty, about inaccessibility, unsafe violence, mental illness. He doesn't say people who are, I think people who are automatically.
Absolutely. I agree. Mr. Gibbons decided which amendment.
But it's a problem. It's a
policy.
Let's get Duke up here.
What I've been told is we're not doing
Duke?
Yeah, I think
Duke we Shepard's still there.
Mr. Shepard,
is Duke there?
I think
Duke, could you step up here
we'll
just for a second?
We'll go to 1570 and then we'll come back to a public hearing before you.
Yeah, come on.
Okay.
Two things real quick, and this is my pet peeve. It's actually what an at-risk child says. I think at-risk, one of the at-risk issues are, it's an automatic, it's for people of color, is an at-risk child. And I don't. Not every kid comes out of an unsafe home or has bad nutrition ends up having difficulty. I admit that.
Senator
it's
Winters?
A general rule.
Senator Winters?
That puts a kid
are you ready to go with 1570?
Yes.
We're going to move that one up
first.
Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1570. If we could have an introduction.
Chair Cohen, member of the committee. Senate Bill 1570 comes to you from the Senate Committee on Healthcare, Human Services, and Rural Health Policy. The bill requires medical assistant coverage of prescription drugs that are immunosuppressant drugs or drugs for treatments of seizures, cancer, HIV, or AIDS. It establishes June 30th, 2016 as a sunset. There is no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal impact statement that's been issued, and you should have that in your package.
I've got a copy of that. My computer is being updated. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Okay. We have no one signed up to testify on this bill. This is a public hearing only. Senator Winters, did you want to speak?
Just briefly, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. It's just the fiscal, and I had understood early when I received the Dr. Goldberg, that the fiscal was indeterminate, and then later, I think the fiscal was put on, I think, by LFO, if you might correct me from that, and explain the fiscal implication.
This is going to do since I have it in my hand.
Yes. Co-chairs and members of the committee, there is a fiscal, and the fiscal overall is indeterminate. The bottom line is that there are certain efforts and strategies that the Oregon Health Authority could implement, but with passage of this bill, they would not be able to implement it, and they would lose some possible savings. And the savings overall are indeterminate, but they did quantify a few things in the fiscal.
The genesis of the bill is to assure that while we're going through all of our forward processes to moving to CCOs and others, that we do not do any harm to this particular population group. And it's HIV, AIDS, cancer, seizure drugs, and what have you. I've been around and psychotropics. I've been around this building so long that I sometimes think I'm probably helped to build the building. But in any event, and I know sometimes when we're doing comprehensive kinds of changes, that sometimes we do things in such a rapid fashion that it has an adverse impact on certain groups. So I didn't want to risk this population at all, so I carved this out in saying that this particular group, while we're going through all this, and so Dr. Bates has helped me by putting the sunset on, that we make certain that this group, cancer, HIV, AIDS, are getting the appropriate drugs and treatment that they need. That's
Thank
basically
you,
the genesis of why I did the bill.
Thank you. And we were not scheduled for a work session today, so we do have that on the record then at this point.
I'll just make a comment. I think a temporary carve-out of these drugs is appropriate this time. We have a lot of information we don't have about how we set up algorithms,
how we set up situations where we make best choices for these particular drugs, especially with the changing and new drugs coming out in this area, especially psychotropics. And until we have more information, I think holding off and carving out temporarily is appropriate. Long run, they're going to have to come under management like the other drugs do, but the next 3 or 4 years give us more information where we can get there.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Freeman. Questions? Thank you, Madam Chair. So, not being a doctor, I'm curious how psychotropics fit into this, maybe in the seizures area, I'm not sure. And then also, I was wondering if there was somebody from the health authority here that could explain the fiscal when it talks about roughly $2.2 million total funds savings being blocked by this or something. I just don't understand how they came up with those numbers and would like to better understand that.
Is there anyone in the audience that could speak to that?
If not, I can follow up offline.
Okay.
Great, thank you.
Psychotropics come under mental health drugs.
I understand that, but they were brought up as part of this discussion, and I'm not sure they are.
Well, it includes mental health drugs, doesn't it?
No, this isn't the mental health drugs. This is HIV, cancer, and seizure.
And it is. Co-chairs, Freeman, I believe the discussion that you're highlighting is for the seizure treatment drugs.
Thank you. There was a comment about psychotropics being part of this. I was just curious if it is or if it isn't. Because there's already a carve-out in the CCO bill for mental health drugs.
You're correct, and I don't... the drugs that's referred to in the bill is seizure, HIV, AIDS, cancer...
This is the engrossed version. It says mental health
and
drugs.
Mental health.
What I'm seeing here is mental health drugs, seizure, cancer, HIV, or AIDS, or an immunosuppressant drug.
Just so everybody knows, in... the Coordinated Care Organization bill, the transformation bill, there is already a carve-out for the mental health drugs. So it sounds like a duplication, at least, in that area. Okay. Thank you.
With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1570 and open a public hearing on HB 4084. Is Representative Gilliam still...
I'm sure he's not far.
I doubt that he's far.
There's a whole group of them right outside the door.
We have a...
There are amendments coming in. There has been no agreement on which amendments yet.
I only opened a public hearing. Oh, my goodness.
Start access to medical record to me.
We have to see. Yes.
I'm not having any...
Start the hearing.
All right, we're going to... begin with Representative Gilliam, who's been patiently waiting. I would like to remind folks we have a long list of people wanting to testify on this bill. I am going to hold you very firmly to just a couple minutes because we have two more bills that we must get to work session before we close this committee.
A
quick comment from Representative Freeman before we start.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very interested in hearing from the people that are going to testify today about the financial impact of this bill, because that's really where my focus on this bill. I recognize there's been a ton of work done on the policy, and I'm very interested in understanding the money and how it's going to be used and where it was coming from and those type of things. So if your comments can be specific around the funding piece of this for the Ways and Means Committee, it would be helpful for me.
With all those caveats, Representative Gilliam, excuse me, Senator Bates.
Ditto.
Okay, I believe everyone has heard the directions. Representative Gilliam, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vic Gilliam, State Representative from Silverton Malala, District 18. Thank you to the committee. There are a number of policy issues that have gone back and forth. I know what your job is. I don't have your job, but I know what it is, and I would say there are those that will address that. I feel very confident that because there is a fund already established, and the individuals who pay into that fund are very excited to use a very small portion of that fund for this purpose, that the fiscal on this is extremely attractive. And I will leave it at that. As I look at the individuals on your panel, Senator, we haven't had the chance to meet yet, but knowing your background, I know you all care about this, I know you understand the policy, and I know you want to move forward to do something for our most vulnerable. Those are our seniors. Thank you for hearing this bill yet again in this building, but to a new panel. Thank you very much. And I would defer now to one of our partners from the governor's office in Duke Shepherd.
Mr. Shepherd. Madam Co-Chair, thank you. For the record, Duke Shepherd. I work for Governor Kitzhaber as a policy advisor, and I will just be brief and echo Representative Gilliam and say that the work is critical. The work that was done on this legislation over the interim was very well done, and that the funding piece appears to be handled. Thank you.
For questions, we will call Gail Meyer and Becky Strauss. And I will reiterate that we are trying to stick to the fiscal conversation on this bill as opposed to a policy discussion. Good morning.
Yes, thank you.
Whichever one of you is ready, please begin.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Becky Strauss. I'm here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. I've submitted written testimony. I don't have a position on the fiscal issues, so I'd like to just, if I have a minute, to touch on our concerns, or if you prefer to refer to my written testimony, defer to you.
I believe we can refer to your written testimony at this point, then, in the interest of time, because we are very tight. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Co-Chair Cowan, members of the committee, Gail Meyer, on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, I also am submitting written testimony. My comment constrained solely to fiscal would be a nuanced one, not the principal comment. Elders are defined in the bill as anyone over the age of 65. And I think the debate that's occurred in other hearings on this is that elders don't have constitutional rights of privacy in their medical or their financial records, because there was a U.S. Supreme Court decision under financial records law that the account holder of the financial records doesn't own the records. They belong to the financial institution, and therefore the account holder doesn't have a constitutional right of privacy. That U.S. Supreme Court decision would not control the Oregon question of whether or not there is a constitutional right of privacy under our Constitution, which would be Article 1, Section 9.
And this has been explored in the policy committee, is that correct?
Co-Chair Cowan, it has been part of the underlying debate. It has been part of the underlying debate. And I simply want to point out to this committee that the possibility exists that an elder would have a cause of action for the securing of their records without notice and without consent pursuant to the bill.
Thank you. And I appreciate that both of you have brought with you the written testimony, and that will allow this committee to have an opportunity to review that.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will call now Matt Smith and John Wentworth, reminding you again that we are not intending to revisit the policy discussions.
Thank you. My name is John Wentworth. I'm a prosecutor with the Clackamas County District Attorney's Office. I supervise the unit that specializes in the prosecution of elder abuse cases in our county. Fiscally, the one provision that was in the bill that, from my view, would actually have a fiscal impact has been taken out, and that involves the creation of a felony assault provision. That's been removed. Frankly, from a fiscal standpoint, there isn't much in here that would create any kind of fiscal impact of any significance on any office or any agency within the state. So we are very supportive of this, because as Representative Gilliam was saying, that's a very attractive feature of this provision or this legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
My name is Matt Smith. I'm a detective with the Forest Grove Police Department. I also serve on my countywide multidisciplinary elder abuse team. I'm simply here to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Well, thank you for coming. Are there any questions?
I have a question.
Senator,
it's not a fiscal question, so maybe you want me to defer.
I want to respect the fact that we've asked all of our panelists to restrict their conversations.
Never mind.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, I don't have a question, but I have a thank you. Can I do a thank you? I want to thank the two individuals for helping us work through this process to get us to where we are today. And I made the statement in the work group that we have done yeoman's work on children, and it's about time that we did work on helping the elderly. Thank you for your help.
Representative Hoyle. First of all, I would like to thank the co-chairs for addressing ways and means issues and ways and means and not doing policy and ways and means. I for one, appreciate that as a member of both the Policy and Ways and Means Committee, so thank you. Detective Smith, I'd just like to ask you, right now with the process that you have to be able to get information to prosecute people who are stealing elders' money or physically abusing them, how much time, energy, and money does that take, and will this bill actually allow your agency, your police force, to save money, and what will be the impact on, what do you feel the impact will be on, say, being able to have an elder save their money so they don't have to go on to state-funded long-term or care facilities because they'll actually be able to keep the money that they earned and put aside? I mean, can you speak to that a little bit? It's anecdotal, but...
Currently, varying on the elder abuse case, it can take between 60 to 90 days for me to get financial records. There is a significant fiscal impact to my agency because I'm currently writing search warrants for financial records. In some cases, I've received bills from banks that have totaled $300 to $400 that my agency is responsible for. This bill would not only streamline the process of obtaining records, but I could potentially limit the scope and limit the fiscal impact on the police department as a whole, because I might be able to proceed with a fraction of the documents that I would need to present it to the district attorney's office. Number two, there are multiple cases that I've investigated where the investigative process took the senior citizen was left destitute and went on Medicaid as a result. In one case, a care facility was over $50,000 in debt, and they had provided care to the senior because they didn't feel ethically or morally that they wanted to evict this person and leave them homeless. I think the financial impacts are significant, and this bill would be a huge step forward in addressing that.
And although you have previously follow-up, please. Although you previously have gotten a search warrant, now you would be required to get a subpoena, but for the specific information through the grand jury, right?
Correct. As addressed in here through a forthcoming amendment, I would appear in front of a grand jury and testify as to why I need the records and that they're germane to an elder abuse investigation.
Right, and those will be in amendments that will be coming shortly. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming. I'll call the last two, Patty O'Sullivan and Fred Steele. And I will advise the audience that we have one amendment before us, but I've been advised that we have additional amendments pending, so we will not be able to take this to a work session today.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Patty O'Sullivan. I'm representing the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, and we're here to support this bill with the amendments. And for us, it's all about safety. As you know, we're mandatory reporters, and currently when the police show up to investigate, we have to tell them to go get a subpoena. This bill will not change that, but I think it's a good step forward to allow us at least to show them the records. We currently cannot, and so we report the abuse, but then we can't share the records with the people that come.
And
so.
Is there any fiscal impact?
There's none. I'm here to answer questions.
Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Fred Steele. I manage our community adult protective services team at the Department of Human Services as one of two representative or members on the Oregon Elder Abuse Work Group from the Department of Human Services. Was definitely a part in the creation of this bill and the legislation, the concepts in the bill. I'm here just to speak specifically to the Quality Care Fund and the use of that in the Resident Safety Review Council, and to say that the department fully supports the use of that funding. It is funding that was created through legislation in 2009. It is provider licensing fees and civil penalty fees that go specifically into that fund. A large part of what that fund was intended to be used for was quality improvement initiatives, and the Resident Safety Review Council is specifically targeted for quality improvement, and it is an initiative in line with the legislation and can answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions for these two individuals? Seeing none, thank you.
I apologize for to those who wanted to have additional policy discussion. It will pass out of a policy committee before it comes to us, and the amendments will be reviewed when they are available. So with that, I will Senator Bates.
Yeah, just to get a feel for this, we've got one amendment in front of us that's clearly a fiscal. What's the second amendment looking like? What's that about?
Representative Hall, can you speak to that?
There was we had a dash six amendment that put into place the requirement that law enforcement get a subpoena before accessing financial records, and in order to accommodate all the people who have concerns about this bill, we're clarifying in the latest amendment that the grand jury would have to issue that subpoena, so it just couldn't be law enforcement issuing a subpoena to themselves.
I understand.
Yes.
Close to policy again, but when's that amendment going to be ready? Is it being drafted
now? It's being drafted as we speak. It's a one-word change. It makes no difference on the fiscal at all whatsoever.
So I expect, since this is supposedly our last meeting, I'm assuming we'll be coming back. And I understand also we're on 1 hour notice for work sessions. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct. So we are quite literally awaiting direction at this point.
Thank you.
Which I have not received at this point.
Okay.
So with that, for now, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3084. And I believe we have another brief break to adjust staffing or get all the papers. Are you?
I'm doing the last.
You're doing the last two.
Hey, Patty.
Do we have the amendment for 1506?
Yes, you should. It should have been out in the
Are we on recess?
No.
No.
Okay.
No. I'd like to perhaps we are on a very brief recess to make sure everyone has the right information in front of them. are back in session, and I will open a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 1506.
Co-chairs, member of the committee, Senate Bill 1506 comes to you from the Senate Committee on Healthcare, Human Services, and Rural and Health Policy. There is a -A6 amendment that we would be working today. The -A6 replaces the bill, and all it does is it requires the Oregon Health Authority to provide to manage care organizations supporting the Central Oregon Health Council real-time pharmacy claims data in a format that's agreed to by the authority and the council. It also requires the council to report back to the appropriate legislative committee during the 2013 regular session. There is no fiscal impact, and there is a minimal fiscal impact. The Oregon Health Authority believe they can provide this information through their MMS system, and they will reprioritize workload to do the design and coding to provide this data.
Thank you. I don't believe we have anyone signed up to testify on this. The amendment before us is the -6 amendment. Is that correct?
Six. Correct.
Yeah.
A6.
-A6.
So, Madam Chair, would you entertain a motion?
I would.
I move the A6 amendments to Senate Bill 1506.
Just to make sure that we are official, we are in work session. I believe I said that, and Senator Bates has moved approval of the -A6 amendments. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Co-Chair Cowan. And I want to thank all the people that have worked on this. This is one more bill that we're doing that the health authority could already do. It just is one of those things I've really found interesting, the need to do it. We're telling them to do something they can already do and want to do, but I'm happy to pass it and tell them to do it. It's amazing to me that we have to pass laws to get agencies to do something they should already be doing. But again, I'm happy to do it.
Thank you. That we have a motion before us to accept the -A6 amendment. Is there any further discussion?
All I'd say is we might get something out of this. This original bill was much broader and talked about capitation and a broader look at how money is spent inside what would potentially become a CCO, and that was eliminated due to some language difficulties and the fact that it really wasn't a global budget and the state was at risk for it. That's the problem. We previously talked about carving out certain drugs. We're not sure what the cost of those drugs are and the outcomes of not managing those drugs. This might give us some information over the next couple of years to really have an idea of what we should be doing with some of those medications. This is primarily aimed at, from their testimony previously, at mental health drugs. So I'm supporting the bill. I agree with Representative Freeman. I think they could do this without the bill, but this will codify it for them and get them back here, and maybe we'll get information that can really help us with the bigger issue of these drugs we've carved out.
Thank you. So we do have a motion, Senator Winters.
Just to ditto what my good Senator Bates said, and I do agree with Representative Freeman. It is unfortunate sometimes we have to direct the agency to do what they should be doing, but I think we do need the information. I worked with the agency to give the assurance that they could do this without any cost. So I'll support the bill, but I do agree with you, Representative.
Thank you. Representative Freeman. Further discussion, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Chair Cowan. I've understood the agency wants to do it. So to me, it seems like you have the agency wanting to do it, the people want it done, and now we're saying, in law, do it. I'm happy to do it. I'm not trying to say that anybody's not doing the right thing here. It's sort of astonishing to me that we have to do a law when everybody wants to do it anyway. But I am happy to do it. I'm ready to vote on it. We beat it to death, so whenever you're ready.
Having had adequate discussion, I believe, is there any objection to the motion, which is approving the -A6 amendment? Seeing none, that amendment is approved. And if I could have a motion on the bill.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1506 as amended to the, I guess, go to full Ways and Means on this one.
I believe so.
On the full committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Second. Senator Bates has moved Senate Bill 1506 as amended to the Ways and Means with a do pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Senate Bill 1506 is moved as amended to the full Ways and Means. Would one of you wish to carry that?
I'll take it. Oh.
I'll take it.
You'll take it.
The winners.
It should be a rousing, rousing of a full discussion. I can imagine the debate will go on for hours.
Okay. That is to full Ways and Means and also to the Senate?
Yeah. It'll be okay.
That's it.
Okay. And when it comes to the House,
the new member would like to take it to the floor.
Madam Chair.
Senator Steiner-Hayward would like to take it to the floor.
If that's all right with you and Senator Winters.
Yes, that's right.
Okay,
thank you.
We got that?
Yeah, thank you both for that.
Yes. Foil
appreciate
on
it.
The House. Okay, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1506.
You have any comment?
I got it.
We don't.
Okay, everyone has made sure that I'm on track here. We are now going to open a work session on House Bill 4023.
Okay. Same time. Co-chairs, member of the committee, you had public hearing on this bill on Monday. It comes to you from the House Committee on Judiciary. It creates a community guardianship, and there is no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal statement, but the fiscal statement essentially says there may be some potential savings for the Department of Human Services. At this time, the amount is indeterminate, so there will be no adjustment to the budget.
Good bill.
Okay. We did hear this bill fairly thoroughly in our last meeting. I don't have anyone signed up to testify. Is there any questions remaining on the panel? Could I get a motion?
Madam Co-Chair, I move House Bill 423 that we pass it out with to full with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Winters has made a motion that we approve House Bill 4023A with a due pass recommendation to the full Ways and Means. Any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 4023A is moved to the full Ways and Means with due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair, would you allow Senator Winters to carry this in the full and on the floor in the Senate, please? This is something that I believe came directly out of some of the work she's done.
And the Krieger on the House.
All right. Senator Winters will carry the bill to the full Ways and Means and to the Senate floor, and Representative Krieger will carry it on the House floor.
Thank you.
With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 4023. And members, we are going to recess the Subcommittee on Human Services for the Joint Ways and Means, but we may resume action before the end of the day today. Resume the recessed hearing for the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee for Human Services. Let's try it again. Subcommittee on Human Services. This is still Wednesday, February 22nd, and we will reopen the work session on House Bill 4084. Could you please help us understand where we are at this point?
Okay, so with House Bill 4084, now you have before you a -A9 amendment and a -A11 amendment. But I'll start with the A9 first because it's simply the expenditure limitation for that $300,000 from the Quality Care Fund. It allows DHS to, it provides the expenditure limitation for DHS. So that's the A9. Amendment. And the -A11 makes a couple of changes to the bill. The original bill requires health care providers to allow law enforcement agency access to certain protected health information without the consent of the person that is under the investigation of abuse. The -A11 limits this immunity to say that only under state law, because the state cannot provide immunity from civil or criminal liability from federal regulations. So that's one change in the A11.
Thank you.
The other change the A11 makes is the original bill requires financial institutions to provide law enforcement agencies certain financial records without consent of the person, and the A11 stipulates that they can't do so pursuant to a subpoena issued by a court or on behalf of the grand jury. And the A11 repeals sections 6, 8, and 10 of the original of the Angros bill. These sections require financial institutions and healthcare providers to provide access to certain information to law enforcement agency. And it repeals those sections on June 30th, 2015.
Thank you. Is there any additional fiscal impact statement with the A11?
These amendments do not change the original fiscal determination. It's just the 300,000 other funds from the Quality Care Plan.
I was going to ask Representative Hoyle if she had any details she wanted to add, because I know she's been working on this.
I just want to thank everybody for coming here to vote on this bill. It's been a long time pulling it together, and I appreciate you voting on it.
Okay. Representative Freeman.
Thank you. If you're so inclined to entertain a motion, I would make a motion to adopt the A9 amendment to HB 4084.
Representative Freeman moves that the A9 -A9 amendment to House Bill 4084 be adopted. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? They are adopted. We also have before us the -A11. Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I move the -A11 amendments to House Bill 4084 be adopted.
Representative Freeman moves approval of the -A11 amendments to House Bill 4084. Is there any discussion on those?
And the only thing I'm going to say is we're going to hear it over again. We're going to hear this sometime down the line. This is Ways and Means. We're not supposed to be doing policy changes. Obviously, this is a policy change, but we're in a four-week session. We've got to get this work done. We can't let good bills die, and we haven't got time to send it back the entire process. This is a consensus bill, a consensus decision. I have no problem voting this out.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? With that understanding, is there any objection to adopting the -A11? Seeing none, the -A11 amendment to House Bill 4084 are adopted.
Madam Co-Chair, I would move House Bill 4084 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due adopt recommendation.
Representative Freeman moves House Bill 4084 as amended to the Full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 4084 as amended is forwarded to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
I would ask that Senator Winters, who has long had a history of working with elderly, especially protection of the elderly, should be allowed to carry it to the Senate floor.
And she was also on the work group along with Senator Przanski, so it would be perfect.
Well, I heard Przanski worked that out.
Yes.
Thank you, Senator Winters. And to the House floor.
Vic and Val have worked hard on it.
I would like to co-carry it with Representative Gilliam, if possible.
Representatives Hoyle and Gilliam. Is there any other business before this committee today, before midnight?
That remains to be seen, obviously.
I believe we are not recessing at this point. I believe we are closing the committee. Is that correct?
This is our last committee?
No.
I was going to do the thank yous and all that. I like that.
We are adjourned.